Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Joanne, how's it going?
Good. We have the fabulous Rob Parisi on the phone from Wild Cherry. I know, John, you must have been loving talking to him because I enjoyed talking to him when we first met. So that's why I said you guys probably had a great time talking. Well, before we get started, let's say thanks to our sponsors, the Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kittnersville, Pennsylvania, KWV Wines in South Africa, Tees for the Times in Clifton, New Jersey, and Syntech Productions in Lenoka Harbor, New Jersey. And we got a little craziness going on, but we are still going to have some fun here. So on the phone with us, Johnny Boy, is Mr. Rob Parisi. He's the lead singer of the band Wild Cherry. Mr. Parisi, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Good. You know, the greatest thing about today is the looters are not stealing toilet paper.
That's all we need. You know? Oh my goodness. So how's everything by you? Everything's good by you?
These are crazy times we're living in, by God, you know?
Yes, they are. Well, let's hope they end soon. So well, for those that don't know, which I highly doubt, Wild Cherry is mostly known for their hit song, Play That Funky Music. A bunch of young white rockers, I believe, at the time, right? You were rockers, actually. You weren't into the funk sound, actually.
Yes, we started out as a rock band, and then times changed. And when I saw times changing, we were losing work. And when we were losing work, we were playing clubs and then started to play discos on off nights. And finally, one night, as I told them in a dressing room, I cannot book us in rock clubs anymore. We're going to have to start transitioning to play these discos. We're going to have to come up with some change. We're going to have to change. And so I changed the band, and we changed our format, and we changed songs, and I wrote that song in the middle of the change that we went through.
Right, and it was the best thing you probably could have done. I mean, at the time, when you were working as a working band with the rock sound, were you guys doing originals or just covers at the time?
No, we were doing cover songs, and we were, playing just like a regular club band would be. And I always had in mind to try to elevate us out of there at some point, but it was like such a crazy thing because the rock band, we had reformed the band from the original band, and after we did that, then that transition started to happen, and so it was like crazy stuff happening while I was trying to get something going originally. And so it just happened that as that was happening, I couldn't really think straight to get that done. And when we were going through that disco thing and working in discos and stuff like that, I wrote that song to just try to get a hit locally and raise our price. But that song just happened to be something that was on everybody's mind in the world. And I took it around to record labels that I knew that, and I got close, but no cigar, because everybody was afraid of the white boy thing. Mm-hmm. And as it turned out, I was ready to give up on that. And it just turns out the CBS Records loved that song, and they signed us, and the rest, it just took off. I mean, it just hit so fast that it was like crazy.
Well, it's literally to this day, it's a dance anthem. I mean, it comes on and everybody just gets up and, you know, just gets out there and dances to it, you know?
It is still one of the 100 biggest songs of all time.
Right, right. That's something to be...
I did Harry Connick's show, Harry Connick Jr. He asked me to come there, and I had already retired, but he just bugged me to come there. So I came to New York and I did a show, and the one thing that he asked me, he said... what was going on with that song? I said, you know, Harry, I said, if I knew how big that song was going to be, I would have stayed up that night and wrote 700 more songs while I was on a roll,
right.
You know.
Right.
You never know. I mean, when you just write something like that, you don't know that it's going to be that big, but then it is, and, you know, it does. And that was on everybody's mind at the time, and,
right.
You know, it still is, and it's what it is. I mean, it's made me
right.
a wonderful life, and I'm very grateful.
Excellent. How old were you when the song took off?
How old was I?
Yeah.
I was 26.
Oh, okay. So you guys were already 20 and out.
I'm 31 now.
Yeah, exactly. You guys had only been 20 and out, you know, for a little while and everything, and then you just thankfully got this hit, and it's just amazing to this day. I mean, it's still – I'm curious, did you guys ever do Soul Train?
We did. We did Soul Train. We did American Bandstand. We played live at the Grammys.
Mm-hmm.
We were nominated for 2 Grammys. We won the American Music Award.
Cool.
We won the Billboard Band of the Year Award for the Best New Band.
Mm-hmm.
We did. You know, it did what it did. You know.
Right. John, they're out of Ohio too. So many amazing musicians that I had no idea came out of Ohio.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
that's a great state. I'll tell you, there are so many people that I could just rattle off that you would be, probably a lot of people would be surprised and impressed at how many people came from Ohio.
A lot of our guests were Ohioans. When we've had them on, we found out that they were from Ohio as well. Amazing, amazing.
Devo came from Ohio. Gosh, I mean, it's just the list that goes on. You know, Trent Reznor, Nine Inch Nails, that came from my area. Just tons of people. The James Gang, Joe Walsh.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the James Gang wanted to play that funky music for them.
Right.
They were friends of ours. They were recording at the same studio at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they came into studio and heard that song, and they wanted it for them, and I said, well, you know, I had known them at that time, and I said, well, I don't know. I mean, I think I would like to get something for us, you know, and they said, well, we have a manager. Would you like us to play that for them? And I said, yes, and that was the people that he played. Jimmy Fox, the drummer, played that song for them, and they, in turn, had a deal with CBS pending upon if they could get a hit song. That song turned out to be the hit that they needed to get a deal. So, you know, that's how that worked, you know.
Right. And it's so funny, before doing this show, I mean, I thought I was pretty knowledgeable about music. And I used to always say to myself, why is the Music Hall of Fame in Ohio? Now I know, because there are so many artists have come out of Ohio. I used to say, why there? You know, but
it's amazing. Tons of people, tons of talent. And you
know
what? Not only that, I have to say that the Beaver Valley area of Pittsburgh, that area produced people like Lou Christie. Tons of people, the Skyliners, some of the best doo-wop records I ever heard came out of that Pittsburgh area, and that was an R&B town. I mean, if you just study that area between Pittsburgh and Cleveland, it is really impressive.
Right.
And I'm
I know.
Just thankful and happy to have come from there, you know.
Right, right. Well, now you're a Floridian. Do you ever go back to Ohio often or no?
Well, no, because at this point we are just parked here, and there is no we have two homes here between Tampa and St. Petersburg in this area, and with the way that things are, the travel things are, and there's no need for us to go back there. We still have a scholarship endowment that I started, that we started, and it's a nonprofit organization, and what we do is we help kids in high school, or we help people that right now are going through this COVID-19 thing that need to eat and stuff like that. We donate money to food banks and stuff like that, but we do, that's what we do. We don't go back lately because of the travel situation, but we still are very connected with donating money for helping with feeding people and sending kids to college or whatever we can do, you know.
Nice, nice, nice. Now, it's true the song you wrote in literally 5 minutes, right?
What's that now?
Is it true you wrote the song in 5 minutes?
I wrote the song in probably less than 5 minutes because we had to, I had to go back to the stage, and then I wrote two verses, and I wrote the chorus, and then I wrote the last verse in the car on the way home, which was probably an hour later. But it's a grand total of less than 5 minutes, because I had the whole song in my head already.
Nice.
It was what we were going through. That's, you know, that was basically it, you know?
Yeah.
Hey,
so
Rob,
now,
how did you come up with the guitar lick in the beginning? How did that come about?
You know what? The Commodores, I knew what they were doing way before. They were an R&B band, and we were playing discos, and white people did not know who those Commodores were. But I heard that rhythm section. It reminded me of the Funk Brothers from Motown. I heard that chord, that rhythm structure, and I loved some of the songs that they were doing, but they were not white hits. They were R&B hits, and we were playing discos, and I was hearing their songs when we were playing discos. And I was telling the guys in the band that if we would beef those songs up a little bit, just like Led Zeppelin's rhythm section. Led Zeppelin was basically an R&B band. I knew that, just like the Stones. They were an R&B band. So what I did when I came up with that tune was to take the Funk Brothers rhythm section structure, and I just beefed it up. And that's how that song came about. But it was based upon the songs that I was hearing from the... We were doing I Feel Sanctified by the Isley Brothers. That was a hit, R&B hit at that time, but it was not... White people did not know who that song was or what that song was. Nobody even knew who the Commodores were at that time. But I did, because I was hearing them. But that's where all of that came from for me. But the structure was basically the Funk Brothers Motown rhythm section that I had grown up through. I mean, even the Beatles, their rhythm sections, there's always a mathematical situation as far as rhythm sections go. I was intrigued by that. I loved that from the time that I was born to learn music and love music. That's always what made me love rock and roll, was that. And so when I wrote Play That Funky Music, it was just what we were listening to at the time and what I was hearing and what I thought would work in that disco thing, because it was working. And so I just applied it. I was very fortunate. It was like, you know, Lionel Richie and I talked one time. We were on an airplane trip together. We were on it, you know, and we were talking about, where does this stuff come from? And it's just like, you know, you get an idea and you just ask for some help, and you know you're lucky if you get something. You know you're lucky if you get an answer. You know what I mean?
Right,
and
right,
so
right.
When I wrote that song, it was just like I was reaching out. I was looking for something to, you know, I knew what I wanted to do, and all the elements came, and, the rest is the rest, you know?
Right, right. You're really a jazz
player.
Did you take
lessons? Hey, Rob, did you take lessons, or were you self-taught?
No, sir. I was, it was like one of those things when I was a little kid where I just heard and I applied. And I was
so you have an ear
very,
then.
I had a perfect, I have perfect pitch. I was very lucky to be born with perfect pitch. And I can sing any note there is. You know, I hear it, you know. And I see music also. That's another kind of strange thing that a lot of people don't realize, but some people do. You know, you can see music. You can hear it. You can see where it's at. You can see the notes. You can see where it belongs. You can see the math. You know, there are just certain people, just like scientists, you know, they see science. They know science. I know music. I was born with it. And I was just very fortunate. And I used it with everything. I taught the band that I had. I taught them songs. I taught them keyboard. I taught the keyboard player parts. But I didn't know anything. I didn't know all the stuff. It was there. And I was blessed and fortunate and grateful to be able to do that. And I still can do that. There's very sophisticated chord changes that I can still hear and create that I don't even know where they come from, but I know they're there, and I do that. I still write stuff that's sometimes I listen to it back, and I say, wow, you know, that's really good, you know. Mm. But I believe, and I'm not trying to be an egomaniac or anything like that, but I'm just saying you either have this or you don't.
Right.
And there's a certain point where you just – if you do and you create something and you listen back to it, it's just like, wow. Just like when I see the results of Play That Funky Music after all this time that it's been a hit, I am just as surprised and grateful and just humble as everybody else is how big that song has remained to be.
Right.
It just, I never take any of this for granted. But, you know, when I create something and the fact that I can still do that and I can still come up with new things, it just really, to me, is like, wow. It's a wow thing. You know, it's a wow factor.
And you're really into jazz. I mean, well, not into it, but jazz, you love jazz, right? I mean.
No, yes, exactly, because it's mathematical. To me, it is very mathematical. And that's why I love jazz, because it's all about the math.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes it so, that's what, you know, and I learn, all, you know, the more that I learn, the more that I learn, you know.
Right.
And that's what, you know, I like people like Henry Mancini. I like people like Nelson Riddle back from my old days. Mm-hmm. I like a lot of the old folks, Miles Davis, you know, of course, Quincy Jones, all those people, they know the same thing. They just, you know, and a lot of my friends now are smooth jazz. They're very successful in smooth jazz, and we talk all the time on the phone. Mm-hmm. We've even worked together a lot. And they mm-hmm. have hits on the charts all the time, but they know the same thing, and we're just – We just all do the same thing, and we all understand why. And I really appreciate their talent, because they're doing it out there. You know, I don't need to do that. I don't do it anymore. I don't want a career anymore. I don't want to go do gigs. I don't want to have to worry about songs on the charts. I don't need to do that anymore. But I do love my friends that do that, and I respect them and appreciate what they're doing, and it's great to know that they're there.
Right, right. Is it true that the name is after the Cherry Ludin's cough drops?
Well, yes, it is. We had...
How did that come about, Rob?
Well, we had a band to get together at that time, and I was going through getting drafted during the Vietnam situation, and I was in college, but they were going to take people in college also. So I went to my doctor and I told him that I was going to get drafted. He said, "Well, you know, you got a stomach problem. Let's put you in a hospital. See what we can do." So I went to the hospital. They were putting tubes down my throat. I was putting a new band together, and we were rehearsing. We had a gig in 2 weeks, and I came out of the hospital. We were rehearsing one day, and I had those cough drops that I was taking to try to ease my throat. And the guys kept saying, "What are we going to call the band?" And I kept coming up with names. They kept saying, "Well, I don't know. We don't like that name." So finally one day I picked up that cough drops off the keyboard, and I said, "You can call the band Wild Cherry. The band's going to make the name. The name doesn't make the band." Sure. And everybody stopped dead. And I said, "Okay, let's pick it up. Let's go." They said, "Wait a minute." I said, "What?" They said, that name. I said, "What name?" They said, "Wild Cherry." I said, "What?" They said, "That's the name of the band." I said, "No." And so we fought for a week or two, and we had a gig, and I said, "We can call ourselves Wild Cherry, but after that gig, I'm going to come up with something else." So the first gig, they brought girls up to the stage, and they said, "Tell him what you think about that name." And they said, "Oh, we love that name. We love that name." And that was a name that I could not get rid of. They did that week after week, and I could not get rid of the name.
Yeah, well,
but I always
actually,
said, "I'm sorry."
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's it. That's it.
I was going to say, I still have the album. It was actually the first album my sister purchased, and I was looking at it the other day, and I got to ask you, do you know, or are you still in touch with the model who did the cover, or no, you had no idea who?
No, you know what? That was a model that CBS hired to do that cover. They asked me what I wanted. I come up with the logo. They said, "What do you want it for the logo?" And I said, "Something that is timeless is Coca-Cola." And so they came up with a logo, kind of like Coca-Cola's logo.
Yeah, it does
kind of
look like
that.
Right,
exactly. And so to me, that was like, okay, that'll work. And then they told me what they were going to do, and a guy from Cleveland, an artist, his name was Bob Rapp, he came up with the concept for that album cover. And CBS did that. At the time, what was the greatest thing for me was CBS was the biggest record company in the world, and they had the best art department. So anything that I needed to get done, I could get done the best. And God bless them. They were able to accomplish anything for us that we needed. And so that's where it was all at, you know?
Yeah, it's a great album cover.
It looks
as brand new as the day it was bought. It's still in the plastic, believe it or not. I mean, it was open, but the plastic is still around it, the cellophane. So,
you know,
yes,
you know what? It won awards. It was a wonderful thing, and there was a great thing. I mean, there was I have to say that everything that we had done around all of our artwork was really top shelf. It was wonderful.
Did you have a problem with not being able to say you got, well, how could I phrase this with everything that's going on? Did you have an issue with the fact that they didn't want people to know you were a white act?
Well, we had a problem. Of course we did. And I had a problem with the record company that we were dealing with, the production company, because I wanted our photos to be on the cover.
Of course.
And they did not want to show that we were white. And I said, "The song is played at funky music, White Boy.
Right.
What problem do you have with telling people what I said?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was to me a problem with them all the way through what we did. But unusually crazy was that we used to go play black places, and they would say, "I didn't know those guys was white."
Exactly. I was going to say, what was the reaction?
The song is play that fucking music, white boy.
Right.
What part about that don't you get, you know?
Right. And what was the reaction when they did see you guys up on stage and you finally...
Well, the reaction to me was like, okie dokie. You know, I mean, what do you do about that? I mean, I just said, okay, they don't know where, okay, you know, okay, so we are. Okay, now where are we now? So everything that I did with my career at that point after that was between my production company saying, well, now we need another song. Why don't you write another song about, you know, play the fucking music? And I said, like what? You know, like that's over. One song does not make a career. I mean, I can say, okay, now we played that fucking music, and now here we are, blah, 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 you know. And to me, it was just like a continuation of, you know, one song doesn't make a career. Let's move on. I've got other things to write. I've got other things to say.
Right.
And that was always the argument with them. And I got to the point where it was like so frustrating that they wanted to make the whole career of Play That Funky Music and my band about that song.
Yeah.
And I just said, you know, there is just like so much more to what I'm doing than that song.
Right.
But it's great. It's wonderful. And thank you, and that we are appreciated. But, you know, let's try to find other things to move on to, you know?
Yeah.
It was just frustrating. It really was.
Oh, I bet. Did Vanilla Ice do a cover of the song?
Vanilla Ice did, yes, in 1990.
I never heard it.
It was Billy and Seller, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised I didn't hear it. That's why I was wanted to confirm that it's true.
Actually, it was the flip side of Ice Ice Baby to begin with.
Okay.
And they tried to push that, and it did not happen, and so they flipped it, and Ice Ice Baby was a hit.
Yeah,
so
I have then to listen to his version.
Right, so then Play That Funky Music after Ice Ice Baby hit was the next release. They just flipped the record over, and that was a hit.
Right.
And, so yeah, it was
I'm gonna check it out after the show because I didn't know that he did that, and I mean, like you said, it was a major hit, and I don't recall hearing it. So
yeah,
I wasn't a big Vanilla Ice fan. I mean, Ice Ice Baby, you couldn't go anywhere without hearing it. But you know, I wasn't a fanatic about him. So you know, I didn't.
Well, you
follow
know, Ice Ice
that,
Baby
but.
Was actually Under Pressure.
Exactly, yeah. No, it's not,
right,
according
right.
to him. No, don't say that. Cause
no, 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 yeah, I know. I know, you know, God bless,
yeah.
God bless him. I love him. God bless him, you know, whatever.
Yeah. So what happened with the band? I mean, was it the music changing?
No more
or
hits.
Was it a problem
that
with
always kills it. When there's no more hits, that always kills it. No. We had other songs that charted.
Right.
But it was a constant struggle for me to try to get the people who were our production company to understand that there was life beyond that song.
Right.
What happened was they thought that that song basically was a gimmick song, and it was a one and done. And no matter what we did after that, they just kept trying to say, well, why can't you do something else like that? Why can't you? I said, because, you know, it's one song, you know, that's it. That doesn't make a career, you know. We had other songs that charted. We had a couple songs that were, one song is still a Carolina Beach classic, 1-2-3 Kind of Love that we had. If you go down to the North Carolina, South Carolina, there's Carolina Beach songs that are classic hits from them. And that song, that song was one of them. We had a couple other songs that did pretty good, but we just did not have anything that strong. And I had other people tell me at the time, like the Isley Brothers were good friends of ours. We did a whole tour with them. And Kelly Isley one time told me backstage, he said, you know, he said, when we had Who's That Lady, he said, we sold 6 million copies of that single. He said, but we sold 75,000 albums. He said, you guys are selling millions of albums, and that single, he said, you know, that means that there's something more on there that people want to hear. He said, and you should, you know, and even Lionel Richie, when I talked to him when we had our first album, he said, why won't they release any more singles than the first? I said, I have no idea. I'm arguing with them every single day. I don't know. He said, it behooves them to release more singles off of that first album. So this is the thing. Business-wise, I was arguing with them, the production company, to release more singles off of that first album. They didn't do that. When I first delivered that album, I produced it. I delivered that album, and I told them, I said, here's your first three singles. Played up Funky Music, I Feel Sanctified, which was a Commodore song, and a slow song, Hold On, which is the name of the song. And they didn't do that. They just came to me and they said, oh, we need another album. CBS wants another. You know, it was always changing horses in the middle of the string. So I had to fight that, and I did the best I could, and there you go.
Right, right. Now, any of the guys in the band go on to, go on to any other bands we would know of?
Brian Bassett, a guitar player, he went with Foghat. He's with them now. Yeah, and Alan Wentz, he did some stuff with Luther, and he did Cyndi Lauper, Ron Beidle did some stuff back in Pittsburgh. They were all good guys, very good musicians, very good. But just
now,
together,
did you guys all grow up together, or you put the band together from an ad or something like that?
Excuse me?
Did you guys grow up together, or how did you put the band together?
No. I didn't know any of them. Matter of fact, the original Wild Cherry was very successful. We had broke up. I was selling my equipment. Brian Bassett called me to buy some guitars. And he came down. He said, why did you quit? And I told him why. I said, you know, it just didn't work out, whatever. He said, if you ever put a band together, he said, call me. So I called him. I was in business working with a food company, a managing steakhouse at the time, becoming a manager. And I called him and I got back and I said, this restaurant thing's not working out. And we put a band together. We found we did auditions, and we found the bass player. He was originally from Detroit, Alan Wentz. We found him at another place. We added him. And then Brian, who was the drummer, Ron Beidle, we added him. And that's how we got together, the four of us, you know. But it was just an accident.
Right. I don't know if you remember the conversation that you and I had, that I actually worked with one of your bass players in one of my bands, and I cannot for the life of me think of his name. He was from Florida, long hair, really nice guy, and I don't know why I can't remember his name. It might have been Jim. I don't remember, but what a nice guy. And when he told me he worked with you guys, I was like, oh, wow, how cool is this that I'm working with the bassist from Wild Cherry? I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. You know.
I had so many guys come through, and so many good guys. I mean, it's been my job. It's been to be a leader, I've had guys come through that are very good people throughout the whole doggone, situation, and it's just been a good run. You know, I've been blessed to have good musicians around me all the time. You know.
Good. Are you still in touch with any of the guys? Are they still around?
All my guys still get paid.
No. I didn't know if you're still, friends and everything. You're still tight. That's all.
Everybody that I've worked with, that I know, they're on my friend list for Facebook. They're still in touch. We're all still in touch. Yeah.
A lot of bands, they fall out, and, there's the riff, and, just asking if everything was good, so that's great,
It's all good. Everything's good. Yep.
So now
we
I know
all
you're
grew
a
up sooner or later, you know what
right,
I mean?
Right. I know you're a blues guy. When was the last music you did put out? Was it blues as well, or jazz? I'm sorry, jazz. When was the last jazz album you put out?
Well, I'm kind of retired at this point, and I'm just more or less, if I do anything, it's because I want to do it. And lately, I've been writing my wife songs.
All right.
And I record them. You know, I write her some nice songs every once in a while, and I record them. Other than that, that's all I do.
Nice, nice. Well, who better to sing them than Rob Parisi, right?
I don't know. She thinks that, you know, as long as she doesn't find anybody else, if she thinks it's good, I'm good, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And so any books or anything going on? I mean, are you working on anything at all, or are you just strictly retired?
I'm not doing anything at this point because I've been very fortunate. I invested well throughout my career. And I have everything in order financially. And we're going through this thing that we're all going through right now.
Yeah,
and I'm just, you know, like everybody else, we're holed up. We are, luckily, we both love each other very much and we're happy. So we have no problem being confined every day.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find myself doing now and then lately is coming up with an idea for a song and I just record it. But what I do lately is the last two things that I came up with are songs that I just tell her how much I care about her. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. You know, that's where I am right now. But I mean, I have no career plans at all. We only help people that are in need now and then. That's it.
Right. Nice.
Hey,
that's
Rob.
Great.
Rob, do you ever miss playing out? Because you ever miss playing out live? Because I know I haven't played out live in a long time, and I kind of miss it every once in a while.
Sir, and I'll tell you why. Because you know what it takes? It takes airplanes. It takes trips. It takes travel agents, it takes roadies, it takes gear, it takes everything that I don't want to deal with for the rest of my life.
I think that's the thing we forget about. We just think about playing on the stage. We forget about loading and loading.
No, buddy. I'll tell you what. You know, the best time that I have is when all that garbage is done and I'm on stage. But I'm only on stage for about 45 minutes an hour. And then I got to worry about getting back on a plane and getting back up, you know. I mean, I do all that business stuff myself. I mean, and with my people, I have to coordinate it. And, you know, I don't find it to this point in my life. I mean, I'm 69 years old right now. I don't find it fun anymore. I don't.
Yeah.
There was a time when I did. I was on a plane every day. I was on a bus every day. I didn't care. I was happy. Where are we going tomorrow, you know? But now, it's like, no, no.
Hmm. Hmm. Well, good. That's good for you. You know what? When you play the realm and the capacity and the sizes of the people and the audience you've had, I mean, you know, there's a time when you say enough's enough and you know, it's work, too. It's called show business, you know.
I love everything about it. I love everything that I love everybody. And, you know, and trust me, I love the fact that everybody in the world still cares. And I love loving the fact that I'm still valid out there. I mean, because people don't have to like you. And you're lucky if they do, you know, and you should appreciate if they do, you know.
Absolutely,
but
yeah.
Would I want to go do that again? Would I want to get out there and do that again? I don't think so.
No, because they do all these flower power tours and all that on the cruises and stuff like that. They've got all the bands they're getting back together. And if they asked you.
It's not my thing anymore, you know, no.
If everything was done for you, the
I'm too old.
Club, the business club. These guys are out there. They're older than you. My God, no.
I'm getting to be an old man now.
They're older than you when they're doing it. You know, but hey, you know.
I'm going to be 70 years old in December, you know.
Well, happy
and besides,
birthday.
You know, I don't look like those young people anymore.
None of us.
You know, who wants to see an old geezer up there, eh? Yeah?
Hey, that's paying almost $200 for the stones. Come on.
It's better for them. It's better for them to look at the YouTube videos of me when I was 26.
Mm.
Because if they saw me now, they would be like, "Oh my God!"
No, man, you're being too old. You kidding me? Oh, geez. So what else? Where can people reach out to you if they wanted to? Since you love everybody so much and they love you, I mean, why don't you let people reach out to you then? Where can they get you, Rob?
People can get me on Facebook. They know where I'm at. I have a 4,400 plus friends on Facebook, and I'm talking to them every day. That's the one thing that I keep telling my friends who are also in this business: talk to your fans because they care about you. They want to talk to you. You know, and I still talk to everybody every day. And if I got something on my mind, I tell people what's on my mind every day. You know, there's a lot of things that are going on today, even politically, that I feel a need to talk about. You know what I mean? I got to, you know, people need guidance. Gosh almighty, you know, especially with what's going on today.
Absolutely.
They need people, you know, they need somebody with their level head to talk to, because there's some crazy stuff going on today, you know?
I wish more of the people who have notoriety and people that their fans that they trust would step up and help the situation at right now. And we're not getting that.
I understand. And I keep telling everybody that I know that is out there that is doing something, talk to your fans. That they don't have to like you. If they do and they ask you something and they say something to you and you don't respond to them, what's the matter with you? Do you think it's because you're too cool that you can't respond to them?
Right.
You know, that's not, you know, a negative answer, you know, nothing is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you should talk to them because they don't have to like you.
Right.
Believe me, I have a lot of friends that I'm talking to all the time that have success, that I'm telling them, talk to your fans. They're there. Talk to them.
And they like it, and they need it, and they enjoy it. They want to be part of you as well if they can't.
I find that people, you know, even if they disagree with me, at least we're talking back and forth. And we're sharing ideas, and it's okay. I mean, because, you know what? Hey, I'm not right all the time. You know, I'm not right all the time.
Mm.
You know, there's going to be things that I'm saying that, you know, you might not agree with. And you know what? Maybe something that you say, I'm going to bounce off, and I'm going to say, well, you know what? You might be right. You know, but it's a communication. It's, you know, it is. It's a line of communication.
Right.
And, you know, we all came from nothing.
Right.
And we're all suddenly somewhere. I met three out of four Beatles, and every one of those guys that I talked to along the way, I found out that we just all came from the same thing.
Mm.
We all came from industrial areas, and our, you know, they came from the same kind of background. My father was a steel mill worker. They came from shipping towns, boat workers, and stuff like that. You know, we all come from the same thing, you know?
Right.
Nobody's born a star.
Right. No, you got to work for it. That's for sure. Yeah.
We all come from nothing, and we work our way towards somewhere. And I just honestly believe that you should talk to people because they put you where you're at. And you would not be anywhere if it wasn't for them. You always are working for people. They put you where you're at, you know?
Well, I know you're not playing or performing anymore. Are the rest of the guys, have they gotten together? Are they traveling as Wild Cherry or no?
Last time we got together was 2014, and as I mentioned before, my wife and I have a scholarship endowment that we started, and we got the original band together, and we did a DVD with the original band, and we played live in my hometown where we rehearsed and started out, and we packed a place, and that was the last time we got together again, and the drummer died a couple years later. It was a very sad situation, but he was the healthiest one of all of us. He just had a health issue and went to the hospital and had a complication, and he died. So after that, I just told the rest of the fellows, I said, you know, that's it. And we have, after that, no, you know, so we're done. But everybody still gets, you know, we still get together, we still talk, and it's just things, you know, it's like the life cycle goes, you know, and it's over. You know, the band, it had a life, but now it's over, you know, and that's it.
How cool was it when they named the street after you? In your hometown.
Oh, my God. It was wonderful. It made me cry. As a matter of fact, Terry Stewart, the president of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, came down for the dinner that they held for me when they named that street after me. And he was the guest speaker. And I've been blessed to have some really good friends. I mean, I'm just... what can you say about this? I mean, you know, you go through your whole career and these people just... they come and they show up, you know.
Right,
and Terry came down and he was guest speaker and they named the street after me. And the people were just, my hometown has been so good to me. I just cannot express, I mean, it's just, I've been fortunate. I mean, how lucky can you be?
You've had an amazing life. That's fabulous.
I have no regrets. I've just been so fortunate, so lucky, and my hometown, I love them. They know that I know where I came. I never forget where I came from.
Mm-hmm.
I still remember that. They still know that. I still donate money to the food banks there and to all the people around there. We try to help feed people, especially through stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing it. I mean, I never, you know, I'm still a hometown kid. You know, my feet are still there. You know, my soul is still there. My heart is still there.
Any crazy stories you could share with us when you were touring?
I'm sorry?
Any crazy stories you could share with us when you were touring?
Go whatever direction you want to, and I'll probably have something for you. I'll tell you, there's so much stuff.
Your wife is there, we can't talk about groupies.
There are so much things that you see when you're out there that it's just like, really? You know? I mean, hey, listen, we had the National Guard had to escort us into gigs because of that played up fucking music white boy thing.
Right.
You know, there's just a lot of stuff that, you know, we went through that I don't think there's anything that anybody could tell me that was crazy that I could say, well, guess what? I got something else, you know? Yeah. But, you know, you just, you've pretty much seen everything after a while, you know?
Right. Well, you know, when we were kids, we changed funk to another F word, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know that. You know, when we would sing the song as kids, we would change the word funk to the other F word.
Oh, yeah. I had people tell me that also.
Right.
And they would say that, you know, they thought that that's what I was saying.
Exactly.
And
I was saying, what you were saying.
No, I was like, no. No, but now that you mentioned it, that would have been a great idea.
Yeah. It wouldn't have made
I wish you would have been in the studio with me. I would have made a bit of nice. That would have been something else to nix a recording deal over.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
That
would
have been another reason why I couldn't get a recording deal. Thank you.
Right.
You know,
you wouldn't have gotten on the air, that's for sure.
No. I had a hard enough time as it was, you know.
Exactly. Well, Rob, I've enjoyed speaking with you and getting to know you, Johnny boy. I don't know if you wanted to speak to Rob about anything else, but
I'm just amazed at all the stuff he's done. It's incredible.
Yeah.
John, by the way, 9.5 D shoe and 32-inch waist. If you, you know, Christmas is coming soon.
I have it on. I sent you a friend request, so we'll keep in touch about that.
Yeah.
You know, it was so nice talking to you, John and Joanne. Thank you so very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. All the best to you and your lovely wife and your puppies down there, and just enjoy life. And it's been a pleasure, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I'll be here for the rest of my life, anytime.
All right, honey.
Bye-bye.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Rob was so nice. Isn't he a sweetheart?
Amazing. We had a nice talk off air about the song, because I was telling him that in my band for years, we'd start that song off, and as soon as the guitar part would start, I'd start playing it, the whole floor would just
jump up and dance. I know.
And I asked him a couple of questions about it. I said, you know, that one part there, I never could get that right. And he said, well, that's because we wrote it that way. And he filled me in. He told me how to do it. It's like, wow, okay, that's really good. And he said he did that guitar solo with a borrowed guitar, you know.
Okay.
So it wasn't even his guitar, and it's just he did the first take, amazing guitar solo.
Wow. See, now that's somebody who's taking the times and rolling with it and changing everything to make it and be in the business and have a career with such longevity. I mean, he was a rock band. They were doing rock. And, you know,
we had the same problems with my band when we were playing in the 70s. We were doing all cover song, rock and roll, and then the disco thing hit. And no one wanted to hear what we were playing anymore. And it was like, we take a break, and they play the disco songs. Everyone would be dancing. We'd get up on stage, they'd all leave. You know,
so it
was a very hard time. But he made the most out of it by, you know, making a song that everyone would get up and dance for. So
a good song, that will never die. I mean, and every time I hear it now, ever since Seinfeld episode with Elaine, when she does the dance to it, every time I hear it, I think of that. But it's so funny, though. I literally had the album in my hands the other day, and it looks as crisp and clean as it did the day my sister bought it. And it still has the cellophane on it. And the cover, you know, I'll never forget the cover. When I saw it, I was like, what the hell did she buy? You know, because I thought it was like something for guys or something, because it was the woman with the cherry between her teeth, and turned out it was one of the number one hit songs of the time and going forward. So, hey,
and still is.
One hit may not be a one hit wonder, but if that one hit wonder's cool with me, I wouldn't mind being a one hit wonder. You know what I mean?
To have a one hit wonder that never dies and keeps going and going, I think that's pretty damn good.
Exactly. Well, I think, what do you think, Johnny? You want to call it a night?
Yeah, I think we should call it a night. We go out, we go watch the riots on TV. You know, roast some marshmallows, and you know, with our masks on. What strange times, Joanne?
Yes, very
it's
strange.
Horrible.
Strange indeed. Strange indeed. I don't know what's going on anymore. You know, but anyway, Wednesday, we have on Wednesday Brandon. He's a young guy who, Brandon Thomas, Thompson, I believe his name is. Hold on one second. I have it here. It canceled on me. I'm sorry. Brandon is a young man who, wait a minute, am I at the right date? Hold on. I don't know what the heck I've got going on here. Oh, June 3rd, we have Simone is going to be joining us, and Brandon, and my email won't open up, and I'm not happy about this, guys. I'm sorry. Hold on 1 second. I'm so sorry, guys. I'm sorry. Bear with me. Jesus.
Oh, is Simone the Simone's the soul singer?
Yeah, I gotta find it here. Jeez. I can't believe this, guys. I am so sorry. I don't have it here on my computer. Yeah, Simone and Brandon, guys. I will post it for you on Facebook. Simone has done some amazing things for the community that's struggling, and Brandon is a major speaker, and he's such a young guy, and he's just phenomenal. And I will post it when I can get into my computer. I am so sorry I can't get into my computer to give you the information. So, but we do have an amazing month coming up too. I'm looking forward to it. My calendar is far away, but we do have Mr. Joe Alves coming back. We owe Joe an evening that we unfortunately couldn't have him on that day. He's on June 17th. We hope you guys join us for that. Joe is the creator of The Shark in Jaws. He's the production designer, and he was supposed to be on with us, what, a week or two ago? And we ran along with one of our guests, unfortunately, and so Joe will be back. Oh, no, who else is coming back? Our good friend, Mr. Michael Cole. He called me the other day to shoot the shit, and I can't wait to have him back on. He's such a sweetheart. So anyway, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. Thank you, Mr. Rob Parisi. What a pleasure. Thank you to our sponsors, the High Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kitnersville, Pennsylvania, KWV Wines in South Africa, Teach for the Times in Clifton, New Jersey, and Syntec Productions in Lenoka Harbor, New Jersey. Our website is still being done. We apologize for not having Ed Rambo on. We ran into a little difficulty with getting him on. So we will, I don't know if we'll be doing a future date with Ed or not, but anyway, that's why he wasn't on tonight. But we thank you all for listening. Have a great week. We'll see you guys Wednesday. I will post this information ASAP about our guests for Wednesday, and hopefully we catch you then. Sound great?
Sounds good.
All right, everybody. Thank you, Johnny Boy.
Right,
have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Love you. Bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye. Take care.